This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
CBS Eye in the World, I'm John Batchelor. Pakistan. Death toll rises to 60, says CNN, after suicide bombings ripped through two religious ceremonies in Pakistan. Two in Balochistan, the troubled province of Pakistan. One in the northwest provinces, the troubled province of Pakistan. These bombings are unclaimed at this moment. However, we learn. I welcome Bill Rajo of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, senior fellow. He keeps the Long War Journal with his colleagues. And Hussain Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now at the Hudson Institute. Mr. Ambassador, I come to you. There is no claim on these bombings. The Peshawar bombing did not take, at this point, any life, but the other bombings did, and the death toll can rise. It was the Prophet's birthday. Do you have any estimation of why this happened and who did it? Good evening to you.
Good evening. There is no immediate claim, but we have a pattern before us. Several celebrations of the Prophet's birthday have been attacked by the TTP in the past. They believe, like, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses do not celebrate Christmas. There are groups within Islam who think that celebrating the Prophet's birthday is not Islamic. Sectarian attacks have been part of TTP's method of getting recognition and putting the Pakistani state on the defensive. These are very soft targets because people are in a celebratory mood. They are there to, there's some religious observances, and they're not armed. They're not going there thinking that they're in a war zone. And they're soft targets, and these targets have been attacked in the past. And most of those attacks have been either by ISIS affiliates or by the TTP. So even though there has not been a statement so far that we have seen, the likelihood that the perpetrator is the same as the perpetrator in the past is very high.
Does this round of bombings connect in any fashion to the election that is not named yet but is underway, the election process? Does it touch that?
I don't think that it is directly connected to the election process. But look, in an environment of insurgency, in an environment of violence, in an environment of religious extremism, running a functional democracy does become difficult, and it has proved difficult for Pakistan. So could this become the basis for delay in elections, for holding putting down new conditions for elections? We don't know. Pakistan has had bombings before earlier elections as well. The 2008 election was particularly brutal and violent. Benazir Bhutto, the most popular leader at the time, was killed in an attack by one of the factions of the TTP at that time. Other political rallies were attacked. It is an ongoing thing. If anything, it is a wake-up call for Pakistan's elite as a whole, the military in particular, to find a solution to Pakistan's permanent threat from extremism. And the solution, of course, lies in confronting extremism, which successive Pakistani governments have failed to do.
Bill, a very good evening to you. What is the relationship, as we understand it, between the Taliban of Pakistan, the Pakistani Taliban, the TTP, and the Taliban in charge in Kabul right now? Do they have a working relationship?
Good evening, John. Yes, they have a very close working relationship. And in fact, the leader of the TTP, or the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, swears allegiance to the Afghan Taliban's emir. The Afghan Taliban provides safe haven for the Pakistani Taliban. We'll call them the Pakistani Taliban, or TTP. The UN estimates 5,000 to 7,000 members of the TTP, including its leadership, shelters inside of Afghanistan. We know that Al-Qaeda, which is, of course, supported by the Afghan Taliban, is running at least one training camp for the Pakistani Taliban in Kunar province, and it's to train suicide bombers. So this relationship has always been very, very close. The Pakistani Taliban wants what the Afghan Taliban has, which is the control of a state. It wants to establish, as the Afghan Taliban has its Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, the Pakistani Taliban wants to take control of Pakistan and establish its Islamic Emirate of Pakistan. They emulate the Afghan Taliban's tactics and strategy. They're, you know, up against the Pakistani state and the Pakistani military, which is far more capable than the Afghan military and government was, but that won't stop them from trying. They're running a persistent insurgency. It's been ongoing since its formation in late 2006, early 2007. And the fact is the Pakistani Taliban very likely would not have the success that it's had over the past decade and a half without the Afghan Taliban, without safe haven inside of Afghanistan and support of the Afghan Taliban.
And so in the region, this attack would be understood as a way of the Taliban in Kabul expressing its power, just as the Taliban in Pakistan expresses its power by murdering people on the Prophet's birthday. I'm trying to figure out how they gain from this, Bill.
Yeah, so it's a complicated relationship. The Pakistani state supports the Afghan Taliban. It wants strategic depth inside of Afghanistan, and it has it. But the Pakistani state knows that the Afghan Taliban supports the Pakistani Taliban, and yet it continues. The Pakistani state hoped that it would have more influence over the Afghan Taliban after it seized control of the country in August of 2021. But it's not going to sever that relationship. Strategic depth for the Pakistani state inside of Afghanistan trumps by several degrees of magnitude the violence that is caused by the Pakistani Taliban inside of Pakistan. It's sort of the cynical price that the Pakistani state is willing to pay. The Afghan Taliban, it's going to keep supporting the Pakistani Taliban, knowing that the Pakistani state will continue to support the Afghan Taliban. This is what we call the wheel of jihad, and it keeps on turning.
Mr. Ambassador, there is an election process underway. The interim Prime Minister, Kakar, in a conversation with Josh Rogan of the Washington Post last week, he was in town for the United Nations opening assembly, made a remark that struck me as revelatory. He said, every country for itself. It is every country for itself. Does Pakistan at this point believe that it is isolated and abandoned by the United States? Does Pakistan believe that it must make decisions in a very rough neighborhood that are not logical all the time but are surviving? What is the mood in this interim government pending in the election?
Well, I am not part of the interim government and not privy to what they think at a private level, so I do not know what is their mood. But one thing is very clear, that they are there as stand-ins for the Pakistani military. The Pakistani military wants a certain outcome of the next election. It's fearful of Imran Khan's return to power, not because it is worried about his policies. They know what his policies are going to be, but more about his very vindictive personality. And so the interim government also has the responsibility, it feels, of rehabilitating the military in the eyes of the public. Now, the reason why all of this has happened is because the military installed Imran Khan, brought him to power, created support for him, but is now facing the problem where the creature is taking on the creator. And a lot of younger people who have no idea of Pakistan's history, who know nothing about the past, who have just been brought up on social media propaganda that the military itself helped engineer, believe that he is the messiah. And because he says the military is bad, therefore, it's bad. And when he said it was good, it was good. And so the caretaker government sees it as its duty to try and bring about some decompression as well before it can hold an election. Now, is it all constitutional and legal? Of course not. But then Pakistan has almost never been run fully according to the constitution and the law.
And the relationship to Moscow, the relationship to Beijing, the relationship to Washington, are those all...
Well, none of these are determined by a caretaker government at all. And certainly, even civilian governments have very little say in these matters. The military has its priorities. The military would like a very close relationship with the United States while retaining its relationship with India. Whether that's possible or not is a different matter. They still think that India is the primary rival of Pakistan and the main enemy that they have to confront. They're trying to do a balancing act. And so, I mean, from Pakistan's point of view, it does make sense to try and have some kind of a balance in relations with the various powers, because the United States is not going to be as generous towards Pakistan as it has been in the past. And Pakistan does not want to totally depend upon China. Russia remains undependable, but if there is some scope of getting sort of cheaper oil from them, why not? India does it. Why shouldn't we do it? That's the way they think.
Hossein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. Bill Rajo of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's a senior fellow, keeps the Long War Journal. When we come back, it is August 26, 2021. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.